Good evening. As it is the fifth Rosh within the last 48 hours, I don't really think it's necessary to introduce Rablev, but still I would like to tell you the following story I had before Rablev came. I spoke to somebody who wanted to know who is Rablev. So I said, Rablev, he was born in America, but the Rosh in Miami, and now he's in Moshe Matisio, there the Rosh. And next to this person was standing also another American-born, one of the Rosh Chodesh nowadays, and he told me, you Swiss one, you don't understand anything. Over here in Switzerland, you also very much get to look who is from Canton Zurich and who is from Canton Zug. But us in America, we do the same thing. And Rav Lev is a Telscher. So, that was my introduction, to know that we don't understand this, who is it, but that's how it is. I want to take the chance just to thank Rav Lev for coming to Zurich, to give all these droshes, and wish him on behalf of all of us many, many more successful shiurim. Thank you very much.
I want to first thank the Zurich community for the very warm welcome that I received here, and I thank you also for giving me the opportunity to see such a really, really fine community. And I want to especially thank Aaron and Yaffa Ryan for organizing my trip here very effectively. And Aaron and Gila Green, who were my hosts here, and they gave me really very fine atmosphere. And I invite all of you, not all at once, but all of you, to come and visit us in Moshav Matityahu. This past week's Sedra was a very, very difficult Sedra to understand if you understand it properly. Many, many questions that can be asked and many answers that can be given. And I want to give you a perspective on the Sedra with one answer to all these many questions. Let's start with some questions first, and then we'll get to a perspective on the Sedra that answers many, many questions and also resolves many difficulties with the Sedra. The famous Rashi, right away in the beginning of the Sedra, Vayisrotzitzu Habonim Bekirba, these two embryos were agitating within Rivka Imenu. And Rashi says, what was all this agitation? That whenever Rivka passed by a Beis Avodah Zarah, a place of idolatry, Esav wanted to go out. And whenever she passed by a Beis Medrash, Yaakov wanted to go out. Very interesting Medrash, but it seems to contradict the entire foundation of Yiddishkeit. The entire foundation of the Torah is that people have free choice. They can choose to be a tzaddik or choose to be a rasha. No one is predestined to be righteous or wicked. And yet, we have two embryos. One of them, obviously wicked, who wants to go and serve idolatry. And one already a righteous person who wants to go learn Torah. So, doesn't that contradict the entire idea of what Torah is? If that's not enough, it also contradicts the Gemara. The Gemara says that Rebbe and Antoninus used to learn Torah together. Rebbe was the Nasi of Klal Yisrael, and Antoninus was the Roman Caesar. Some say he was Anthony, Antoninus. And they had an argument. When does the Yetzer Hara enter a person? When does a person have a Yetzer Hara? Rebbe said at conception, and Antonina said at birth. And Antonina's brought a proof to his side, and Rebbe, in the end, agreed. That means that there is no Yetzer Hara. No one has an evil inclination before they're born. If that's the case, where was Esav running to serve idolatry before he was born? Next question. Okay, these two children are diametrically opposed. One seemingly a Rasha and one a Tzaddik from before birth. Then they're born. Pasuk says, Vayigdalu hana'arim, the children grew up. And when they became bar mitzvah, Esav went out into the fields to hunt, and Yaakov went to learn the Beis Medrash. And Rashi says, the entire first 13 years of their life, no one took too much notice of them. They both went to school, they both came home from school, nobody took too much notice of them. I don't understand. These two children were so different before they were born. One was running to serve idolatry, one was learning to serve Torah. All of a sudden they're born, and there's no difference between them. People don't notice any difference. And then, just the day of the bar mitzvah, immediately they're different again. That's not the way the world works. So what's going on over here? They're different, then they're the same, then all of a sudden they're different again, just the day of the bar mitzvah. Okay, so Rivka and Yitzchak now, at least from bar mitzvah on, have two very clear children. One, a Talmud Chacham, a Ben Torah, and one, a hunter, who before he was born wanted to serve idolatry. And Yitzchak has to give brachas to one of them, and he chooses to give it to Esav. Didn't Yitzchak know who his children were? So if you're telling me that perhaps Yitzchak didn't know this, he didn't know. But I'll tell you, he did know. Because it says that when Yaakov came in impersonating Esav, he made two mistakes that gave Yitzchak the feeling that this is not Esav. The first mistake, he said, Yokum na'avi, please, my father, get up. And Yitzchak said, I never heard Esav said please and thank you in his life. Can't be Esav. And then he said, Ki hikra Hashem elokecha lefonai, I came quickly because God made it easy for me. And Yitzchak said, I never heard Esav mention God's name. So here's a father who knows that he has a son who never says please and thank you, is not too good between man and man, who never mentions God's name, and this is the one he wants to give the blessings to, and not the Ben Torah sitting and learning at Beis Medrash. Okay, you could say that Yitzchak recognized it, and Esav didn't say please and thank you, and he didn't mention God's name, but that doesn't make him an evil person, that doesn't make him a Russian. But Chazal say not like that. Chazal say that when Esav was 15 years old, this is before Yitzchak wanted to give him the brachas, he celebrated his 15th birthday with three major sins. He committed adultery, idolatry, and murder on the same day, and came home tired from the field because of those three sins. That day, Avraham Avinu died 5 years earlier than he should have, that he shouldn't see Esav going out off the derech l'tarbus roa, committing these three terrible sins. Avraham Avinu had to die, because if he wouldn't have, he would have seen clearly how Esav went out to be a rasha. And Yitzchak doesn't know that Esav is such a rasha. He doesn't recognize that he committed three major sins. Avraham Avinu had to die. It obviously was obvious. And Yitzchak doesn't know. And he still wants to give Esav these brachas. And finally, Rivka did know. And she sent Yaakov in to impersonate Esav in order to get the brachas. Why didn't she do something much simpler? Go to her husband and tell him you're making a tremendous mistake. You don't realize who this child is. Esav's a Rasha. Yaakov's a Tzadik. Don't give Esav the brachas, give Yaakov. Why couldn't she go to her husband and tell him? And again, there are answers to each of these questions separately. I'm going to try to give you a perspective on this whole issue that answers all the questions with one perspective. In order to do that, I have to start with some other questions. If you leave early, you're not going to get any answers. Let me read you a Rambam. The Rambam in Sefer Mishneh Torah, Hilchos Tshuva, Perek Hei Halacha Beis. The Rambam says like this: Al Yaver b'machshavticha davar zeh she'omrim tipshei umos ha'olam v'rov golmei b'nei Yisrael. Do not entertain the thought. Don't even think this idea that many foolish goyim say and unpolished Jews also think. And what is that? Shakadosh Baruch Hu gozer al ha'adam mitchilas b'riyaso liosadik o'rosha. That God predestines people to be righteous or wicked. Ein hadaber kein, the Rambam says. Categorically, it's not true. Ela kol adam roi lo liosadik ha'mosh rabbeinu o'rosha k'yirava. Every individual has free will and can be, choose to be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu, can be a nabi like Moshe Rabbeinu, but you can be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. O Rosh of Yerubim, or a Rosh like Yerubim ben Nevat. O Chacham Osacho, you can be as smart or stupid as you want to be. O Rachman O Akzori, you can be as merciful or cruel as you want to be. O Kilai Yeshua, or as stingy or as generous. V'chein shar kol adeos, and so too with all other midos, with all other traits, character traits. Who v'ein lo mishi chafohu v'lo gozer alav. No one forces you, no one decrees on you. V'lo mishi mocho le'echad v'shnei adrochim, elohu b'yatzmo. Nothing pulls you to either side, except your own free will. Very clear, Rambam, that when it comes to whether you're going to be cruel or merciful or generous or stingy or smart or stupid or wicked or righteous, all of those things depend totally on your free will. Nothing predestines, pre-decrees, or pulls you to either side. Rambam is pretty clear. Same Rambam, the same book, Mishneh Torah, Hilchos Deos, says the following. Deos har beyesh l'kol echad ve'echad ben mei adam, zu mishuna mizu rechoka mimenu biyosef. People have many character traits, many midos, from one extreme to another. And the Rambam then goes on to describe all different kinds of character traits. Some people are very easy to anger, and some people never get angry at all. Some people are merciful, and some people are cruel. Some people are stingy, and some people are very generous. And then the Rambam says, and not only are there extremes, but there's everything in between. Some people are somewhat merciful, somewhat generous, and so on. V'chol ha-deos, says the Rambam, all of these traits, yesh mehem deos shehen la'odam mitchilas b'riyoso v'titeva gufo. Some of them are part of a person's nature from when he is born or conceived. The yesh mehem imenu deos shetivo shalavim zem mechuvim v'osu v'kabalos v'mehera yosem ishara deos. Some of them are not part of your innate nature, but they are things that you have a predisposition to. It's easier for you to be cruel, easier to be merciful. The yesh mehem shelamad osam yacherim, Some of them you learn from other people, or influenced by other people, and some of them you actually get on your own. Seemingly a tremendous contradiction here. The same Rambam who says that all these same character traits, cruel or merciful, stingy or generous, as examples, the Rambam says in the first halacha that nothing decrees, nothing is part of your nature, you have complete free choice to decide what you're going to be. And here the Rambam says that it's true. Some people are born merciful and some people are born cruel, or they have a predisposition to it, and only sometimes you get it on your own. So which is it? In addition, the first Rambam that says that nothing decrees whether a person is going to be righteous or wicked is based on a Gemara. The Gemara says that when a person is conceived, a malach comes and takes that blastula, the beginning creation of a human being, and presents it before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the malach says, Tipa zu matehei olav. What's going to be with this person? Is he going to be strong or weak? Handsome or ugly? Smart or stupid? But one thing is not said, righteous or wicked. But it's interesting, the Gemara mentions one thing that is decreed on the person, whether you're going to be smart or not. And the Rambam said that when you're going to be smart or not is something that depends on your free choice. So the Rambam contradicts the Gemara, and he contradicts himself. Here he says that the same character traits that he says in Hilchos Tshuva are totally within your free choice. In Hilchos Deos, he says, it's not true. People are born with different characters. So which is it? The answer, I think, is very simple. These two Rambams are talking about two completely different things. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos is talking about personality traits, character traits. And that's true. No one is born parid and develops his character as he grows up. People are born with characters. Some people are born real characters. You bring two children home from the hospital. So one is very cool, calm, collected, never whimpers, never complains, everything is fine. You can throw him around the room and he won't cry. If you throw him around the room too much, he won't cry at all. But in any case, and the other one, every moment is cranky and upset, and everything upsets him. You have two children, go to nursery school, to Ghana. One comes home, one shoe is missing, his lunch is missing. What happened? He gave it to his friends. And the other one comes home with somebody else's shoes and somebody else's lunch. He took it from his friends. Children have characters. They don't create their characters, they're born with them. People are different. Some children love to pull the wings off of flies. They have a natia towards cruelty. And some children faint at the sight of blood. They're very squeamish. That is a fact of life, that people are born with different characters. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva is talking about something else. He's talking about behavior, how you use those character traits. No character trait is good or bad. They are all part. The circumstances in which you use them make them good or bad. Give me an example. Imagine if I was born with a predisposition to be cruel. I, when a kid, I used to pull the wings off the flies, enjoy to see blood gush, and you were born squeamish. You fainted at the sight of blood, very merciful. We're both walking down the street, and we have iron poles in our hands. As an American, I say we're going to little league practice, baseball practice, with baseball bats in our hands. And all of a sudden, a terrorist falls at our feet. He's just killed 200 innocent people, and he's on his way to kill 200 more innocent people. And he asks us, could you please help me up? I'm late for my next appointment. And we have now two choices what to do. We can help him up and send him on his way, or we can take the baseball bats in our hand and beat his brains in. Now, unless you belong to the ACLU or some crazy leftist, everyone would agree that the proper behavior at that moment is to take the baseball bat and beat his brains in so he'll never harm another innocent person. I'm cruel. I've been waiting for this my whole life, to beat somebody's brains in. So I'm going to have an easy time doing what's proper because my nature of cruelty is going to make it easy for me to do what is right at this moment. You, on the other hand, are very squeamish. It would be hard for you to take that baseball bat and beat his brains in. But you are able to overcome that, suppress your mercy, and do what's right. So in that situation, cruelty is a positive trait because the behavior that's necessary is to be cruel. Okay, we're walking down the street, we beat this guy's brains in, our baseball bats are full of blood. We're walking down the street, and a little old lady falls down by our feet. Now we have a choice what to do. Beat her brains in, or help her up. Here, I would imagine that everyone would agree. If not, then please get help. Everyone would agree that you should help the little old lady up and not beat her brains. Here, your quality of mercy is going to make it easy for you to help this poor little old lady up. But my quality of cruelty is going to say, my dad is already bloody. I mean, I'm going to have to suppress my innate feelings, overcome them, and help the little old lady up. So whether you're cruel or merciful doesn't make you good or bad, because it depends on the circumstance. Sometimes what is positive is to exercise cruelty, and sometimes what's positive is to exercise mercy. The Rambam tells us that people are born with personality traits, with character traits, but none of them are good or bad. They are parah. How you use them makes them good or bad. And that, the Rambam says in Hilchos Teshuva, no one forces you to use your character traits, good or bad. That's totally in your control. Two separate things. The Rambam in Hilchos Teshuva is talking about behavior. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos is talking about character traits. The truth is, though, it's not so simple, because it's still not fair. Because if I have a predisposition to cruelty, and you have a predisposition to mercy, I have a greater chance of being a Rasha, and you have a greater chance of being a Tzaddik. Why? Because out of 100 times, 99 of the times, it's good to be merciful. Maybe 1% of the time you have a terrorist fall at your feet and it's good to be cruel. So I'm going to have to suppress my nature and go against it 99% of the time. And only 1% of the time am I going to use my nature for the good. You, on the other hand, are the opposite. 99% of the time you're going to be able to go according to your nature for the good. And only 1% of the time are you going to have to suppress and overcome your nature when it's necessary to be cruel. So it's much easier for me to be a Rasha and for you to be a Tzaddik. So there are three answers to that problem. First, if we only had one character trait, mercy and cruelty, then it would be a problem. But we have hundreds of character traits. And eventually it evens out. I may be more prone to cruelty and you to mercy, but I'm more prone to be generous and you're more prone to be stingy. In that character trait, I have the easier time of being a tzaddik, because most of the time it's good to be generous. Only sometimes it's good to be stingy. And you have a harder time because you have a predisposition to be stingy. So it evens out. In some character traits, I have the easier one, sometimes I have the harder one, and so on. There's a problem with that too, because we all know people who, from the time that they're born, either have a predominance of the bad traits or the good traits. They're both stingy and cruel or whatever by nature. So it's still not so fair. There's another thing that makes it more fair. And that is, God is the one who brings to you the challenges in life. We like to call that a Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't give a person an Nisayon that he can't overcome. He doesn't test people with things they can't pass. Only teachers in school give tests that you can't pass. God gives tests you can pass. Which means the following. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam knows your character. And he knows what kinds of challenges you can handle and what not. And he usually makes the challenges he brings you in life to fit your character. And if he knows that it does not fit your character, and you can control it, then he doesn't hold you responsible for it. Only God knows what a person can control or not, and he makes that decision whether it's something that you're capable of doing or you're not capable, because it's against your nature completely. And he usually brings things to you that fit your nature. And the third factor is that the Ribbono Shel Olam takes into consideration what your character is when he punishes or rewards. Meaning the following. Let's say that I am prone to anger. I get angry very easily. And you, very difficult to make you angry. Somebody comes into the room and steps on both of our toes, and we both lose it and go berserk, lose our temper. Who's going to get punished more for losing their temper, me or you? You. You by nature are very calm. For you to lose your temper takes a lot. For me, God knows it's my nature. It was difficult for me to control my temper. So I'm going to get punished less, and you're going to get punished more for losing your temper. What if we both control ourselves? Who's going to get more reward? It's harder for me to control myself. I'm going to get more reward than you. It's easy for you to control yourself. So therefore, people are born with character traits, with personality traits. That's true. How they use them in all different circumstances are totally within a person's free will. The Rambam says, no one forces you to use your character for the good or for the bad. That is your free will. That you have a character and that you are prone to certain kinds of character traits, that's also true. But that doesn't make you a tzaddik or a rosh. Now let's go back to Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov and Esav were definitely different characters. They were born completely different children that did not make one a tzaddik or one a rosh. And over the last 20 years, I've been saying what I'm going to tell you now as my own conjecture. And last year, by accident, I found a medrash that says exactly what I've been saying for 20 years. So now I have no choice. I can't say it in my name. I'll say it in the name of the medrash. I reasoned the following. Klal Yisrael have two kinds of leaders, very different in their makeup. We have a melech, a king. A king is an aggressive, dynamic person who deals with the physical infrastructure of the world. And we have a kohen gadol. The kohen gadol is more spiritual, more calm, collected, passive, not dynamic, active, doesn't have to go around killing people, just the opposite. The Jewish people were built on 12 tribes. The 12 tribes are very different than each other. Each one has different character traits, because that's what makes the Jewish people greater, because we have all different kinds of characters that work together in making the perfection of Klal Yisrael. The Medrash says that Yitzchak Avinu could have had 12 tribes. For some reason it didn't work out. But he surely could have had two tribes, the tribe of Esau and the tribe of Yaakov, both of them building the Jewish people together. And my conjecture was that Esau, the kings would have come from Esau, and the Kohanim would have come from Yaakov. What made me think that? There was someone in history who had the same character makeup as Esau. Who was that? David HaMelech. It says, Esau was Admoni, and it says the same exact terminology by David HaMelech, Admoni Yafei Einan. Esau killed, and David killed plenty of people. David killed the Yafei Einan. He killed because the Sanhedrin told him to kill, and Esau killed because he wanted to kill. But the same character traits existed by both. And therefore, I conjectured that Esau, had he chosen to use his character in a positive way, would have been the progenitor of kings in the Jewish people. And Yaakov, had he chosen to use his character properly, would have been the progenitor of the Kohanim. And then I found a Medrash last year, a Medrash Zuta in Shir HaShirim. If you want to look it up, the first parak of Shir HaShirim, Pasuk Tes Vav, the Medrash says like this: the Yaakov Tziv Ayigdilu Hanu'orim Hare Yaakov Ve'esav Kishem Shechol Hashem Al Yaakov Kach HaRoi Shiyokul Al Esav. Just like God's name devolved on Yaakov, it could have devolved on Esav too. Esav HaRoi HaYoroi Shiyikore Yaakov the Yaakov HaRoi Shiyikore Esav. Esav could have been Yaakov, and Yaakov could have been Esav. Esav HaYoroi L'Hamid Malachim. Esav was fit to bring out kings. The Yaakov HaYoroi L'Hamid Kohan. And Yaakov was fit to bring out Kohan. Exactly what I said. HaBrachos HaMishonos Ruyel Esav. The first brachos, which were physical brachos, were fit for Esav, the king. The HaKronos and the last brachos, the one spiritual brachos of getting Eretz Yisrael, were fit for Yaakov. Leah and Zilpha, Reuyos LeEsav. Leah and Zilpha were properly, could have gone to Esav, and Rachel and Bila, Reuyos Yaakov. The Niklu Mimenu Kol HaMatanos Ha'elu. But Esav, because he chose to use his character the wrong way, lost it all. But theoretically, potentially, Esau could have chosen to use his character properly, and he would have built the Jewish people together with Yaakov. Esau, the Malachim, would have come from him, and Yaakov, the Kohanim, would have come from him. So it's true. These two embryos were totally different characters. There is no Medrash, to the best of my knowledge. If you can find one, please don't tell me about it. But if you find one and you do tell me, I'll have to admit that what I'm going to tell you is not true. But I've looked and I haven't found any medrash that says that whenever she passed by a place of Torah, Yaakov wanted to go out to learn. And whenever she passed a place of Avodah Zarah, Esav wanted to go out to serve Avodah Zarah. It doesn't say that. All it says is Esav wanted to go out and Yaakov wanted to go out. It doesn't say what they wanted to do. Which means the following. These two embryos, who had totally different characters from conception, for a good reason, because Esau had the potential to be the tribe that would bring the kings to the Jewish people, and Yaakov the one who would bring the Kohanim. And therefore they had to be two different, diametrically opposed personalities. Esau was attracted to the physical world. Because you're attracted to the physical world doesn't mean you're going to be a Rosh. In fact, the Sifsei Kohen al Torah, the Gurei al Ariza, the Talmidim of the Ariza, asked the following question. It says, whenever Rivka passed by a place of Odezora, Esau wanted to go out. What in the world was Rivka doing there? You're not allowed to be around a place of Odezora. Why was Rivka there? Every time she passed by, when was she passing by places of Odezora? They say she grew up amongst people who served Odezora. She understood them, and she felt she could be Makari them. She could change them. She could convince them to give up their Odezora. So she went to these places to speak to these people. Who said that Esau didn't want to come out to do the same thing? Korah. He didn't have to come out to serve idolatry. He was attracted to physical places in the world. Because Avodah Zarah is the most physical place. It's a place where they take spiritual things and turn them into material things. The king has to be involved in a physical environment. So he was born, he was conceived with the attraction to that kind of place in the world, but that doesn't make you a Russian. You can be attracted to those places and use your attraction for the good, just like Rivka did. The fact that Yaakov was attracted to spiritual places, that's where a Kohen is attracted. He has to be involved in spiritual places. So Yaakov was attracted to spiritual places. What's the most spiritual place of Beis Medrash? But doesn't mean that Yaakov was automatically a tzaddik. You can be attracted to spiritual places and not be a tzaddik. There are plenty of gurus who sit at the top of mountains contemplating their navel because they're very interested in spirituality, but they're not tzaddikim. There are people, unfortunately, who very much like the environment of a Beis Medrash. They never learn anything. Take a little coffee here, little Lashon Hara over there, little break over here. But they like that environment. They don't like a more physical environment. That doesn't make you a tzaddik, because you like to hang around the Beis Medrash. So Yaakov, nowhere, to the best of my knowledge, does it say that Yaakov wanted to go out and learn Torah. He wanted to go out because the Beis Medrash was the environment he was attracted to. He could have used it for the good, he could have used it for the bad. Esau was attracted to the more physical environment because that's what his nature was. He could have used it for the good or used it for the bad. Nowhere does it say that this one was a tzaddik and this one was a rasha. They just were different. And therefore, ברוך אתה אדוני אלוהינו מלך העולם שהכל נהיה בדברו. After they were born, no one took notice, not because they weren't different. They were different. So what? Children are different. What to take notice of? Esau had his character, and Yaakov had his character. Didn't make one a tzaddik or one a rasha. They both went to school, they both came home to school. In fact, the Psalm Shavuot Hirsch says that Medrash is not telling us just a fact, it's a critique of Yitzchak and Rivka. How in the world could they send these two so different children to the same school? A school that would be good for a Yaakov would be oppressive to an Esau. And a school that would be good for an Esau would be oppressive to a Yaakov. How could they send these two children to the same school? Chanok l'nar al pi darko. Teach a child according to his nature. Esau should have been sent to a field school where he could check animals and use his nature in a positive way. And Yaakov should have been sent to a place where he'd be with the four walls with Sfarim, and that was his nature. So nobody took notice. Doesn't mean they weren't different. They were different, so what? It's only when they became bar mitzvah and they began to choose their behavior, and Esau chose to use his nature to go out and hunt, and Yaakov chose to use his nature to go and learn Torah, that people started to take notice. They're not just different characters. They're different in their behavior. That makes a difference. Okay? So they're different in their behavior already. How come Yitzchak didn't notice that? So what we said, that Esav didn't say please and thank you and didn't mention Shem Hashem, Yitzchak understood that to be part of Esav's nature for the good. Esav's going to be a king. Kings are not squeamish little people who always say please and thank you. They're very dynamic, aggressive people. Okay, Esav hasn't yet polished it off to know to your father you say please and thank you. But that's the nature of a king, to be stern, aggressive. So he doesn't say please and thank you. That's because that's his nature. He's going to be my little king. And the Ramban, the Maral also, says that Esav didn't mention God's name, Yitzchak saw, as a milo. Because Esav's in the field all day, practicing to be a king. And he's around places that you're not allowed to mention God's name, because they are dirty places. So Esav is a machmir, and he refuses to mention God's name anywhere for fear that he'll mention it in a place that you're not allowed to mention. That's on Yitzchak's side. Okay, maybe. But how about the three sins? On 15, Esav committed adultery, idolatry, and murder. Didn't Yitzchak see that? Avraham Avinu had to die not to see it. How did Yitzchak not see that? That already is not a king. That's a rosh. Not true. I'll prove it. One of the three is so clear that you have to say something, even though it may sound a little contrived about the other two. But one of them is clear that you could see it as not only not a sin, but something really commendable. Esav committed murder. Who did he kill? Nimrod. Nimrod was the arch tyrant of that generation. Imagine someone who killed Hitler, Yimach Shemo, right away in the beginning of World War II. Would anybody except the Nazis consider him a murderer? The world would have considered him a hero. He rid the world of a tyrant. Couldn't you see Yitzchak Avinu saying, here's my little king, he's 15 years old, and he's already done what kings are supposed to do, rid the world of evil people. He's killed the arch tyrant of the generation, Nimrod. That's a sin. He's a hero. He's a 15-year-old who's already acting like a king. That's clear. But that wasn't clearly a sin. So why did Chazal say that he committed murder? Because if you kill Hitler because you want to rid the world of a tyrant, you're a hero, and you did a mitzvah. If you kill Hitler because you want his uniform, you're a murderer. Chazal say that the reason Esav killed Nimrod was not to rid the world of a Russian, because he wanted his special clothing. That makes him a murderer. But you can see that Yitzchak Avinu, not sure. We don't know what's in Esav's head. He killed the tyrant of the generation. Could be he did a mitzvah. Could be his intentions were not good and he did a terrible sin. Which is it? When you have a doubt as to someone's behavior, if it's good or bad, what's the halacha? Don lekatzchus, judge him favorably. Yitzchak had a mitzvah to judge Esav favorably and to assume that what he was doing as the future king and not as a murderer. How about the others? He committed adultery. So first of all, what was the adultery? Chazal say, Shebo'al Nara Murasa. He seduced an engaged woman. Tosfos already in Sanhedrin asked a very simple question. There is no such thing as an engaged woman by Goyim. that only exists by Jews. We have two stages to marriage, Erusin and Nisuin. In both stages, a woman is a married woman, and living with her is committing adultery. By Goyim, there is no such thing as Erusin. Their marriage is only when you consummate the marriage is it considered a marriage. Until then, it's like we call today an engagement. It means that you're promised to marry someone, but you're not married yet. So this woman wasn't married. Tosfos says true. She wasn't a married woman, so it wasn't nice. It wasn't adultery, but it wasn't nice. Okay. Could you see, based on what the murder was, that Esav convinced himself that this is not only not an Avera, it's a mitzvah. Why? This poor woman is destined to marry some idol worshiper. And that's going to be the end of her life, to marry an idol worshiper. I'm the son of Yitzchak, the grandson of Avraham. If I seduce this woman, then I'll be able to be makarif her and bring her to a belief in God. You don't think that there are people in this world, without going into too much detail, or have been people in the world, who in the name of Kiruv, in bringing people close to Yiddishkeit, crossed the red lines of Arayas and Tzniyas with good intentions? Who's to say that Esav didn't project that and at least give Yitzchak a doubt? And that's what kings do. All of kings came from behavior that was not 100% sanuva. Where did the kings come from? Lot and his daughters, Yehuda and Tamar, David and Bathsheba. None of them real averus, as Chazal said, but not exactly pure. So couldn't you see Yitzchak saying, here's my king. Okay, he's not 100% what's supposed to be, but he's not a Russian. He's just crossing some red lines in the name of Kiruv. And how about idolatry? In the 1950s, after World War II, there were many Jewish children that were taken into convents and monasteries by the Catholics. And not only wouldn't they give them up, they wouldn't let anybody in to find out who was there, because they wanted to raise them as Catholics. The Gedolim permitted yeshiva bachrim and Beis Yaakov girls to go into to disguise themselves as goyim and to get access into these convents to be able to find who the children were. What they used to do is go in and disguised as who know what, who knows what. And when they finally were in, they would scream out, Shema Yisrael! And they would look for the kids who would answer Baruch Shem Kivod because of Girsa D'Yankasa, because that's what they heard in their homes. They didn't go in with yarmulkes. They didn't go in dressed like the Yaakov girls in order to infiltrate these Bote Avodah Zarah. Couldn't you see Esav saying, I'm going to have to one day destroy these places of idolatry. The best way to do it is infiltrate them. So he went and made believe as if he was part of them in order to later destroy them. Couldn't you see at least a doubt whether maybe that's what kings do? They have to eventually destroy these places, so they have to infiltrate it. So at least there was a doubt that was created if these three sins were sins, or in fact could have been mitzvahs. Yitzchak Avinu had a chiyuv to be done the katzchus, to give Esav the benefit of the doubt. And therefore he looked at these three sins, not as sins, but as Esav preparing to be a king. How about Rivka? So how come Rivka knew differently? The answer is, and Avraham Avinu had to die, that he shouldn't see what Esav was doing. Why didn't they have any doubts? Why did they see it clearly? Because Avram and Rivka grew up amongst idol worshippers, amongst fakers. They could smell a hypocrite a mile away. There was no doubt in their mind that Esav was not on the up and up. Yitzchak Avinu, on the other hand, grew up in a home where he never saw people who were fakers. Either there were Rishoyim outside, but all the people who were hypocrites, Lot, Yishmael, were thrown out of the house. So Yitzchak had a reasonable doubt that maybe Esav is on the up and up, and he had to judge him favorably. Rivka and Avram had no doubts. They could see, they grew up amongst these kind of people. They knew what they were. And therefore to Rivka it was clear who Esav was. So now we're left with one question. So why didn't Rivka go and tell her husband? Why did she have to make Yaakov go in and personate himself as Esav to get the brachas the way that he did? Says Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, a fantastic answer to that question. This is the right place to say it. He says, Rivka surely could have gone and told her husband that Esav was a Rasha, and he shouldn't give him the benefit of the doubt. He's a Rasha. And Yitzchak would have agreed. He would have accepted it. He would have listened to her. And he wouldn't have given Esav the bracha. But he wouldn't have given Yaakov the bracha either. Why? Because that bracha was meant for the king. Tala Shomai, Mishmane Haaretz. Physical, material things. Yavducha Ani. Nations should serve you. Who's he talking about? A Kohen? No, he's talking about a king. So my king is a Rasha. Okay, I can't give him that bracha. But my Kohen Gadol, this passive, nice, soft person, I'm going to give him this bracha. What's he going to do with it? She could have convinced him not to give the bracha to Esav, but she couldn't have convinced him to give it to Yaakov. Therefore, she told Yaakov the following. There's not going to be two Shvatim. There's not going to be Shevet Esav who the kings are going to come from, and Shevet Yaakov that the Kohanim are going to come from. You are it. And the Kohanim and the Malachim are going to have to come from you. You're going to have to prove to your father that you can muster up the same character traits of Esav when necessary, and you deserve the bracha for kings also. And therefore go in and pretend you're Esav and show your father that when necessary you can act like an Esav too. You can have the character traits of Esav and produce kings. And that's exactly what happened. Yaakov went in, and Yitzchak was convinced, something's wrong over here. There's one child who's a called Yaakov. On the one hand, he has the nature of a Yaakov. At the same time, you're dying the day Esav. He has the nature of Esav. Which led Yitzchak to believe that it's not going to be two of the children they're going to bring, Kohanim and Malachim, but one of them's going to bring both. He didn't yet know who he was. But because he saw that this child has both character traits, he gave him the bracha. Says he didn't recognize him, and therefore he gave him the bracha. Just the opposite. He didn't recognize him, he should have said, no brachas today, till we find out what's going on. But he was clear to him that this child deserved both of them, and he gave him the bracha. He didn't know who he was yet. When Esav came in and he saw Gehenim open in front of him, he knew that Esav already was off, not part of this anymore. And he realized then the one he gave the bracha to was Yaakov, and Yaakov had the ability, when necessary, to muster up the character traits that Esav had, and when necessary, to use the character traits that Yaakov had. And both kings and Kohanim would come from that one child. That's what Yitzchak was convinced, and that's why he gave him the bracha. So this parsha is not a parsha of predestined tzaddikim and rishoyim. It's a parasha that teaches us that human beings are different. And everybody is born with personality traits that fit their mission in this world. And everybody has the free choice to choose to use their character in a positive way or use their character in a negative way. Nothing forces, nothing pulls you to how you use your character. But what your character is surely predestined, pre-decreed, and set by the Ribbono Shel Olam, because everybody is different in this world, and everybody has to fulfill a different mission, and needs a different character to fulfill their mission. And therefore the job of parents and teachers is not to change people's characters. The Vilna Gaon says you can't change your character. The most you can do is control it and guide it in the proper direction. And therefore the job of teachers, the job of parents, is to recognize who their children are and what their character traits are, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and to guide them to use those strengths in a positive way and to protect themselves from their weaknesses and use them also in a positive way, but not try to change their character, because that's an impossibility. So Mirtz Hashem, if we understand that, and we understand that both Yaakov and Esav could have both been tzaddikim, and Yaakov and Esav could have both been rishoyim, and Yaakov was a tzaddik because he chose to be a tzaddik, and Esav was a rasha because he chose to be a rasha, then we'll understand that when we look at our children, and we look at other people, and we see that they're very different, one from the other, we won't judge them negatively or positively. We'll judge them as human beings with different characters and try to help them and guide them to use their characters in the most positive way, l'kadoshim shamayim, in order to bring the Ribbono Shel Olam's plan in this world in the most positive way. And if we do that, then we'll see nachas from all of our children, from all of Klal Yisrael. Ad bias kol tzedek m'heir of yomim. Thank you.